set your mind free with a free plan from Fidelity. Start by organizing your plan around what matters most to you. As you go, you'll be able to see your full financial picture, which covers spending, saving, debt, and goals in one simple view. Get started by visiting fidelity.com/freeplan. Expenses charged by your investments and other costs and fees associated with trading or transacting in your account apply. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE SIPC.
Hey, friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a friend to join me, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between. Hey, y'all, Jamie Ivey here, and today, Beth Moore is joining us on the Happy Hour. And as I was sitting down thinking about this conversation, I really got a little giddy and I started smiling to no one in the room except for me and God. And I remember when I started this podcast, The Happy Hour, and I thought to myself, dream guest, Beth Moore. I mean, I'm telling you, when I started following Jesus, I did Beth Moore's Breaking Free Bible study and it transformed my life. Like God used her and her words and her study and the Holy Spirit changed me forever through that Bible study. And so I just have so much gratitude toward her journey in ministry. I have so much gratitude for the way that she has led so many women to a deeper study into God's word. And so years ago, she was on the show. Episode 108 was the first time she was on. And I remember I was nervous, Nelly. I mean, Beth Moore is who I was talking to. And I sat down to sit here and record this intro for you guys. And I wrote down the episode that she's been on. And I literally, I feel a little tender about it. And I just think, God, look at you. Like, I can't believe that I've had the opportunity to bring conversations with Beth to my listeners. Now, this will be the fourth time she's been on the show. So if you want to go back and listen to other times Beth has been on the show, you can start with episode 108 when I was a big old fan, not knowing what I was doing talking to her. She also was on episode 278. And then last year, she was on episode 463. It was a dual episode with her and Dr. Russell Moore, which they're not related at all, except for the blood of Jesus, but I adore them both. And so today, Beth is coming back, and this is a special episode, I would say. I had the privilege to read Beth's new memoir, which just released into the world yesterday. It's called All My Knotted Up Life. And as I read the book, I again became so grateful for her and her leadership and the way she lets us into her world right now, because she didn't have to, she didn't need to, but she led us again through this story. In fact, I told her as I was reading it, I text her on the show, I tell her, I closed this book and cried. Like I literally closed the book and cried. And so she's here today. And I just want to tell you, I came to this interview with pages of questions for our girl Beth and did not get to hardly any of them, but this conversation is so much fun today, and it's exciting to talk to Beth. And so here is my conversation with Beth Moore, all about her knotted up life. Hey, Beth, welcome back to the Happy Hour.
Jamie, I'm so happy to be with you. I hardly know what to do. So it doesn't matter whether you'd called it that or not. If I spent an hour with you, I'd be happy. I'll tell you that.
Well, listen, I'm happy to be with you, too. I was telling my husband yesterday we were traveling, and I was telling about my day today that I'm going to be interviewing you. And he asked me, he said, do you still get like nervous when you interview Beth? Because the first time I ever had you on my show, I was like, well, I can just shut this thing down. I mean, Beth Moore's on. The Happy Hour is over. We will never interview another guest. We have done it. And I said, you know, the craziest thing.
And then it
thing?
Was a letdown.
No, not at all.
Yes.
Not at all.
Yes.
And then I said, the craziest thing, Aaron, I said, Beth will always be that purse. Like I did your Breaking Free was the first Bible study I ever did when I started following Jesus. I said, there's so much of my life, like kind of mended together with her journey. I said, but the thing is, I feel like she's a friend now. And so I'm so excited that I'm chatting with a friend today.
I hope so. And I feel that way about your generation of women, which I put really close to the age of my daughters, because mm-hmm. my daughters, I'm still very much their mother. They're still very much my daughters, but we also get to come to a point then where we are very, very dear friends. And I love that part of it. I would not take any part of that back. So that's a good thing. And I receive it and love it. And
it's a
I'm
going
to tell you something, Jamie. I want people to know this coming in to the interview, because you and I have texted a few times, and I want to brag on you because in doing a number of these podcast interviews and radio interviews, whatever, and all of us are so overwhelmed with our schedules and have so little time, but you come so prepared. Just to hear from you that I will have read that book from cover to cover by the time I see you. And there have been some times that I've loved it every time. God has blessed it every single time. But that I've been interviewed about it, that it that I knew that they had not read it. And it was fine. But I just want to tell you, you are always ready for your guest and you are always on top of it. And I love being with you.
Love it. You're kind. And I texted you after I finished this book. I finished it in the bath with tears rolling down my eyes. And so I can testify that this is a book worth reading. So that's what we're here to talk about. You have a memoir coming out.
Okay.
And yes. Beth, here's my first question. You have written, I don't know, many, many, many books, many, many Bible studies. You've been doing this for a long, long time.
Long time.
Where did the conversation come up of, I think I, Beth Moore, am going to write a memoir?
I think probably two things played into it more than anything else in the timing. And that was getting to a place where I was facing my 65th birthday, which I did not resent in any way. I've laughed with some people and said, listen, I earned every second of this. Inside this body, it feels like it has lived 150 years. Listen, if your body keeps a score, mine is on the scoreboard. It's in red, bright red numbers. So I feel off. So it's no. It's a very big birthday, an important birthday. But I did not resent or resist it in any way. But I think there is a natural inclination to look back over your shoulder and try to put some pieces of it together before you are so old that all of it has lost the edge of its pain or even its beauty. I didn't want, sometimes with age, there's so much sentimentality there is with me. I can hardly sing a hymn without tears in my eyes. But I want to be able to tell the story while I can still feel the acute brutality of some of it, as well as the beauty of some of it. So part of that was age. The other part, Jamie, I think that you will get this. I thought, oh, this is the perfect time to write a memoir because I have never, ever been less certain of what in heaven's name is happening in my life. I thought, isn't this when you should? And I don't know if other people would feel this way, but I always thought, oh, well, it will make sense, you know, in so many ways. And that I'll know that by the time I reach 65, I truly will know who I am. And of course, I know who
For
I
sure.
am in Jesus. I'm just talking about, I'll be settled in my identity. I'll know where my sense of belonging is. Oh no. All bets were off. It was like, what is even happening to my life? And so it seemed to me that was a great time to tell people in a memoir. I actually have no earthly clue what is going on, except that God is gracious and He has always been with me. So,
well,
because I'm a mess.
Aren't we all? This is what I love about memoirs. And memoirs is probably one of my most favorite genres of books to read. And especially
Absolutely.
From people who, and usually the people writing memoirs are public figures, you know? And so, It really is one of my favorites because as humans, we look at people the way our society is set up. We see what they allow us to see. We either see their works that create, the jobs that they do, the families they build from afar. Just
yes.
in the past couple of years.
All profile.
I've read Katie Couric's memoir, Will Smith's, Matthew McConaughey's, and all of them I adored because they opened the door to their life a little bit. And it's as if we get to see raw humanity. Like, oh, so when you're on stage talking about this, here's what's happening in your house. And it makes us see people. It makes us see celebrities as people. And so I appreciated how you brought us into that so much, Beth, is you opened the curtain
so
and
glad.
Said, here's what you've seen. Here's me. Here's the real me.
That's right. And one of the things that any of us would say at a point like this, that if that are in this thing with Jesus, I guess there could, you could just fake your way through it. But I think what I would say to someone, if they said that was a Beth I didn't even know existed, well, what I would say to you is that what I told you and conveyed to you was the absolute truth. It mm-hmm. just was not all there was. There were some difficulties we were facing within our own home mm-hmm. that at that time were not, let me say this, not only were not appropriate to be told, also still just happening in such real time that mm-hmm. exactly what kind of conclusion and encouragement are you going to come to mm-hmm. in that minute? But also you have to decide, I want someone to hear me say this. You really have to decide what the public,
right?
I'm not your haters as well as your, those who,
lovers,
who love
yeah.
you and approve
yeah.
of you. What they are, what the public is worthy of hearing of that which is very, very tender and private mm-hmm. to you. But this was very, very well thought out, extremely deliberate through a conversation with Keith, through a conversation with my publisher. As I say again, that at my age, in my mid-60s, there were some things that I wanted to still minister to and about that were going to demand a little more transparency. And what we really came to was that it was just worth it. You know, it's like at this point, exactly why would I hide any of that? Plus,
right.
certain people, I say this with a little bit of a grin, but also a little bit serious, for you to really write a memoir that is authentic, it can often require that certain people are home with the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you had that space now to do that.
I have that
yes.
space.
Yes.
I have that
yes.
space.
Well,
yes.
I want to jump into some of my favorite things. First of all, I wrote down all the things I learned about you, Beth, that I didn't know. Okay, are you ready?
Oh, good.
Did
yes.
not know that you were in drill team. And I love this. And it makes perfect sense now, drill team Beth.
Of course it does.
Also,
of course it does.
Southwest Texas. I was like, oh, I never knew. I assumed for some weird reason that you were an Aggie. And here I know now you are a Bobcat.
No.
Okay.
No. I went to a smaller school. I was too scared to go to a big school.
I didn't know, and I think this is important, and I'll probably allude to it later, that you taught sixth grade Sunday school. I knew you taught mm-hmm. aerobics. I didn't know you did it for 12 years.
12 years.
Yes. I also knew you taught Sunday school, but I did not know you taught Sunday school for 23
yes.
years. Oh, my gosh.
And loved it. I would still be doing it today if I could.
I did not realize you were Lifeway's first official women's Bible study. I mean, if I would have thought really hard about that, I could have put a lot of dots together. I'm like, I didn't realize that was their first official study that they did. And then I nearly died and fell out of my bed when you were talking about a woman falling out in the spirit at a Living Proof event. And you said this, I quote you, you said, you're praying over this woman. And you said, with everything in me, I ask God to bless you and grant your petitions, but I'm going to need you to wake up in Jesus' name or I'm going to get fired.
In Jesus' name. Yeah, Jamie, since we're on video, I need to demonstrate for you in case you didn't fully understand what I did with her body.
Okay.
So now let me fix this camera. You're the only one that has brought this up. I should have known. I should have known that you would. Okay, so I'm praying over her like this. We are leaned into one another. My hands are on her shoulders like this. All of a sudden, she starts to collapse. Well, I grab her around the waist. And when I do, of course, she falls backwards like this.
Gosh.
Because, you know, I've never caught someone in the midst of falling out before.
Right. No, we're
she
Baptist.
Goes back like this. So I sling her. Please imagine. Now, she's over like, I sling her up like this to where her chin goes over my shoulder where I can lodge her there. And then it's like, in Jesus' name, I'm going to have you wake up. You do not know what is at stake here. And it was, I tell you, Jamie, and I know you feel the same way.
Yeah.
If we could tell some of the things
that
we have all experienced in ministry, people flat out would not believe it. But
Dead.
We'd have to tell on people to tell
uh-huh,
it, you know.
Uh-huh. You got to keep
but,
it in.
Oh, my gosh. It was It was hilarious. And to this day, Travis and I and the team will occasionally bring up that moment of this was, I was staring at the end right there.
Oh, the best. And then I love that your family used Campo Fenique for everything, because my family did as everything. Well. Just put it on it. You'll be fine. Yes. Beth, you start in the beginning of the book and you tell a story about it when your mom went missing. Yes. You said, and I quote you, you said this, never once did we step toward the phone in the breakfast room to call the police. We Jamie Greens don't. Were a well-known family in a small college town, a Christian family with high visibility at church. You continue to list things about your family, from your dad in the Lions Club to your sister in the marching band. And I couldn't help but read this way earlier in your story as a child, how this fame kept you isolated. And I wondered as I was reading, did this progress in your life? And then I read way further in your book. You said, my life, his life, speaking of Keith, our girls' lives became unrecognizable. And as it often is the case, especially for people in ministry, we were trapped in a secret, unsure of who we could trust with the truth. And I read
100%
both of those things. And I thought, this has been a core in your life.
Yes.
Since a young child. And so
now
you write this memoir and you're 65 and you're thinking, well, I'm not going to be trapped anymore. Is that part of this as well?
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell you something else. We don't even begin to know the statistics, because we don't even know the full spectrum of what mental illness can mean, so especially someone who is not a professional like me. But I'm just going to say to you right now, and I'm thinking of my mother, and I'm thinking of some of the issues that we dealt with later. I'm going to say this to you. How many lives of people that we know have not been somehow touched by mental illness, whether with someone in their home, someone very close in their life, or in their own mirror. Mm-hmm. And yet we are so careful not to talk about it, because out of protection for our people, even if we're the one and it's our people that we want to protect from others knowing their business, whatever it may be, it has shut so many people up in shame. And if we only would be a little more open to talk about some of the, not to bring in graphics that would dishonor the person struggling with it or their caretaker, but if we would talk a little more freely, then we would know, such as is common to so many of us. Mm-hmm. And the one thing mental illness never is, never, ever, ever is the person's fault. Mm-hmm. It may be a lot of things, but it is never their fault. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And that period with my mom, because my dad was out of his mind, and then my mom was in the bed. You talk about unsettling. Mm. It was just that, the instability of that, and thinking, you know, who is it that comes to our rescue here?
Yeah.
And it was some kind of existence.
I remember, you know, getting your full story of you experiencing that as a young girl, and then even experiencing parts of that you speak about within your own home as a grown woman and a mother and a wife and a ministry leader. You've had to grapple with this for so life. And, you know, we're talking about trauma, and we know there's been so much work, praise be to God, about how trauma really affects us and our brains our bodies and all the things.
Right.
You talk about in your book about a moment of reading your journals when you were younger, and you go back and you're reading your journals, and you've seen that you didn't write about anything that was hard, only good.
Jamie, could you believe it?
No, I couldn't. And you said this, you said, maybe it was my idea of how a clean slate should look for a Jesus follower, completely homogenizing, forgiving, and forgetting. Maybe it was a way of keeping no record of wrongs. Whatever it was, I'd not just shut the trauma in, I'd shut it out. Poof, gone almost overnight. Then,
absolutely,
70 pages later, you write, I was 34, a mother of three with a fulfilling ministry, getting to do what I love to do, on the verge of a total self-destruction. You say part of me would not survive this season. So there was a reckoning. So can you talk a little bit about what God had to do for you?
So I was looking at my 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-old journal. And then, as you said, come 34 years old, while someone is telling me her story that I was not prepared to hear. And it was a meeting that was set up by someone I loved and trusted, that really thought, because I had already been honest that I had been victimized by abuse as a child. But that did not mean that I was in any way that didn't make me a professional therapist or counselor mm-hmm. or expert of any kind. I had barely looked it in the face. And so she's telling me her story, and I began, I'll leave those details. It would be too long to tell, but the way that thing began to play out in my mind, and I no longer could even hear what she was saying, but the thing about it is it does come back. There's no way for abuse and for extreme instability to have no impact on us. So we do the best we can as long as we can. And then it's coming. It's coming. And I think in part because the Lord is so faithful, how in the world do you heal up from something you will not even face? Mm-hmm. And so that was going to cause me destruction for as long as it was in there, because it was, I still retained that was deep in there, still looked at life as though I was just full of shame, mm-hmm. as if I was not worthy to be respected, not worthy of boundaries, mm-hmm. And that I was going to be nothing but destructive. Yeah. And so all of those things played in, but the Lord did not let me get away with it. And I'm so glad that he didn't. But I do want to say to someone, I'm so glad you brought this up, Jamie. One thing for sure, you got the book. The things that you hit on, you definitely understood where this thing was going. And I want someone to hear us say that this way of thinking, which was extremely, extremely fundamental in my generation, but that the way of forgiving is to it's just over. It's just over. The way to keep no record of wrongs, it never happened. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand, when Jamie's describing me writing in my journal, it was a prayer journal. I wasn't just lying to myself.
You're not even telling God. You don't even want to tell God.
No, I am telling the Lord himself something that flat out is not true. Why? Because I thought this is the way you do. Yeah. This is what it means to be a good Christian, mm-hmm. is that that's over now. Yeah. It's as if it never happened. Well, let me tell you, my insides were going, oh, girlfriend.
It happened.
Did it ever happen? Did it ever happen? And it's coming.
And it will come out sideways. I mean, it will come out some way, anger, fear, tragedy, like all kinds of things that will come out, which, you know, I didn't even think about this and don't want to spend so much time about this because we have talked about this, me and you, on my podcast before, but it makes a lot of sense when 2016 hits and, you know, conservative evangelical Christians are saying things, following a leader who is so anti what Jesus would have men treat women to be. I'm speaking of former President Trump. And you spoke out so against that. It makes so much sense because you're going, this can't happen on our watch, Christians, because I have been on the floor and this is what this is like.
Forgive me, but Jamie, if I'm going to say this on anybody's podcast, I get to be this honest on yours. What was said was not a mere matter of sexual immorality, but in my estimation, by the time you are big talking about grabbing people by the genitals and not even asking, that there's nothing consensual going on. You just think you have the right to grab someone. That to me goes from immorality to criminality. And so to me, you know, okay, all bets are off here.
Assault.
If you have been through that, and a lot of people that haven't, it did not take victims to say, what in the world are we doing? But for victims, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Right.
There was no way. Mm-hmm. So one thing I had on my side through that whole thing, because it caused such a negative backlash. I mean, the ministry, it would never be the same. I would never be the same. I hope that there's been growth. I hope that some things have been better. Some things have been worse, all of the things. But what I did know at the end of the day was that what I did was very true to who I was and what I believed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Jamie, at some point you just have to rest it at that. What can you do?
If you don't know it, guys, I'm a Texas girl through and through. I've lived here most of my life. I was born here and I love traveling. Here's why I love traveling throughout Texas, because it has a vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities, which means there's an infinite number of different travel experiences. And no two travelers are exactly alike, and it means that no two trips should be either. If you're a beach person, well, you can have fun under the sun with Texas's 350 miles of coastline. If you're more of a rugged vacation type, there are campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. And foodies cannot get enough of Texas's world-famous barbecue and Tex-Mex. Enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. And now, Travel Texas offers a one-of-a-kind online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom, visually led trip matched to their unique interests. Guys, come visit my state. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own.
We've all got old stuff that we should toss, but an old 401k, make sure it keeps working for you. A Fidelity rollover IRA has no account fees or minimums to open. An easy-to-follow rollover process makes it simple to get started in under 15 minutes. Plus, you'll have access to a rollover specialist. Whether you've switched jobs or are just organizing your finances, learn more at fidelity.com/rollover. Consider all your options and the applicable fees and features of each before moving your retirement assets. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
You do have to rest it, and there is a cost to it for sure, and we're grateful for it as well. You said here something that I felt so related to. You said early in the book, I believe this is after you had moved to Houston, you said, I was a good girl doing bad things. I was a bad girl doing good things. And I thought, oh gosh, if that didn't hit me right in the middle of my heart. You said, I was spiraling in our spinning house there in the air where witches fly. The only thing that terrified me more than getting caught was nobody caring enough to catch me. And I read that and I thought, man, so many girls can relate to that. And as I read it, I saw this pain all over your ministry, not your pain, but your response to this pain throughout the next like lifetime that you've been doing. I feel like you have been ministering to women in a response of, I see you, like I see your pain and I have Jesus to offer you. Would you say that that would be true?
I will tell you that as I look back over my shoulder at the ministry, here is what I absolutely know. I absolutely know I would not have had the same burden for women to make it, the same burden. I wouldn't feel the same. I'm very, very protective over women I do not know. But like if I see a woman that's being hit badly, it doesn't even matter if I agreed with what she said or not. It's like, you know what? I will stand right there. Yeah. You better know that I'm going to stand right in front of her. You can punch me, but I'm going to punch you back. You know, it's that kind of thing. And I do think that came from having been through so much and the victimization and knowing the feeling of not knowing where to turn. I want to tell you something again. I didn't write this in the book because this is why the title of it is All My Knotted Up Life, because it's so hard to figure out. I'm going to tell you something very negative that my mother said, but I could tell you 10 things alongside of it that were life-saving to me that she said and did. My mother loved me. She just didn't know what to do with what she saw. But I can tell you that there was a time that she walked in the room when I had a boyfriend over and it was not appropriate, but it was not, dressing or anything like that. But she said to me, this was at a very difficult point in her life, but she said to me, you'll be pregnant by the time you're 16. And I just stared like this and thought, then why don't you help me? I had no boundaries whatsoever. And every now and then, you know, there's that part of you, and there was that part of me, and I couldn't have put it together then, but now as I look back on it, I wish the worst. No, I don't really wish this, Jamie. But if I had known then what I know now, I could have rightly been able to answer her, well, maybe I wouldn't be like this except for your husband. Do you understand what I'm saying, Jamie? What a mess. Mm-hmm. what a mess. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I have a lot
you,
of...
You literally had no one to catch you.
No.
You had no one to catch you.
And, you know, I don't tell my siblings stories. I'm very careful. And I told them from the very top, I said, yours is, I will only tell what happened to me. And then I will only tell what I, some of the things that I did out of it. And so I want you to know, I really, I, what I shared was the tip of the iceberg. Truly it was. Truly it was. And I adored my mother. I was very close to her and not close to my father, but we don't always say the right thing. And you know, we react to a child doing something that scares us as their parent. And sometimes that's exactly right. when we say a very wrong thing.
You know, I want to talk about something that I found so gracious of God on your life. You tell the story about when you felt God calling you into ministry. And it's a beautiful story, but people read it in the book. And it just, I mean, it felt so tender that you even let us into that beautiful part of your story. You talked about this happened and then you went to an older woman. And you even talk about what could have gone wrong in this situation, in this day and age, in the denomination that you were in, and the story that you told her, and the grace of God in your life on that. And I see so many parts in your story, and you already alluded to how much you are for women. And I just feel like you've had some women. You mentioned Marge, another woman in your story who was so impactful to your life. How did that like change the course of your life, that conversation with that woman?
Jamie, I cannot put enough emphasis on it. It what I tried to do in the memoir, and I want to be able to talk other women and men through some of this process because it has been very valuable to me to sit back and look at the story and to see how God moved in the midst of so many crises. But what I attempted to do, because it's very a memoir is very different from an autobiography, in that what I attempted to do, I don't know if this is what people generally do, but I attempted to look at the most shaping moments of my life, whether they shaped me for good or shaped me for bad. Childhood abuse shaped me for bad. It was very destructive. Right. This was one of those moments. There's just not enough emphasis I could put on it, that what she told me to do when she leaned forward to me and said, I think you have had, and Jamie, I think you were raised in my same denomination because this is so perfectly the way we would say it as Southern Baptists. I believe you have had a calling to vocational Christian service. This is exactly the phrase that we have used. And I want you to go Sunday to your pastor and I want you to tell him that you believe that you have received a call from God. And yeah, it was the most shaping thing that possibly could have happened to me. But what I was saying in the book that you're alluding to, Jamie, and that I want to say to our listeners and viewers is that when I look now at how it could have gone wrong when she basically told me, now you go back to your church and let them guide you in what you were going to do. But you know, the mercy of God on me, because I'm trying to think what it would have been like to have been abused at home and to have been abused at church. The fact of it was that for me, church was my safe place. It's probably been why the last few years have been so hard, so full of grief. But my home was the unsafe place.
You mentioned also three profound people who impacted your life. John Bisogno, Marge Caldwell, Buddy Walters, which I think you said they've all gone home to see Jesus. But there was so much in your story as well that I think a lot of people who desire to do Christian vocational ministry can lose sight of. And the fact that you were so intentional with discipleship and teaching and learning and having people pour into your life, so that a lot of people, you probably get this a lot. I went to your I don't know if I want to call it a conference, your lit conference that you did a couple of years ago, and it was so great. But I think a lot of women are like, well, I just want to make Bible studies and teach women and go out and change the world. And that is good and right and true. But when I see your story and you talk about your ministry journey, you were in your local church for years and years and years and years and years, being discipled constantly and poured into. And I would love to hear you talk about the importance of that and why in our culture today so many people want to skip that or even think that they can skip that and still be effective.
I will tell you this, that with what you just described in all of those years growing up in a church atmosphere that very much put the emphasis on evangelism and discipleship, that I'm still going to tell you in all of that, in all of that studying hard, getting tutored, being mentored, and all of those things, because I'm still a very big believer. I'm very, very connected with my local church, and my life is very much invested there. I will still tell you, Jamie Ivy, that I still could possibly have been prepared for what was coming and the ministry that was going to be entrusted to me. I still will tell you, oh, I there was so much more. I wish I had known. I wish I'd have gotten more education, all the things. So I say to you, that step cannot, that there has to be the growth, because during that time, you cannot rush it. You cannot rush maturity in Christ. You cannot. You cannot. It's not our inner man. It's not like our outer man, our physical body, that just, that the longer it's on earth, the more that it ages. That's not true for our souls. We can still be spiritually and psychologically, emotionally. We could talk all of these things, have literally zero coping skills, and we can still be like an adolescent. We can still be like a three-year-old. You know some people that have just never, they're still toddlers having fits and all the things. There's no way around the process. And I'd say even further than that, that at any point that we stop that, at any point we stop learning, and I mean, on purpose, stop studying. We have not ceased being saved. I'm just going to use our, you know, evangelical terminology. We've not ceased being saved, but we have certainly ceased being disciples, because that word meant, that Greek word that translates disciples, means, the essence of it is learners. So it's got to be, and I said this at Lit, and I'll say it again, and it's not meant to be insulting. It's meant to be just what is more natural to people than to want to skip what it takes to be able to sustain where you are believing God's calling you to go. But I've said so many times, listen, a teacher that doesn't want to study is a talker, not a teacher. You don't want to do that. As it is, I taught more than I knew. As it is, I said more than I knew what I was talking about. But we have to go through that. And God, we have to go through the process. God very much on purpose sought out that I would run my race against a constant gush of wind. Like it was just, it was like learning to run with like in the sand, carrying heavy weights in my hands. But he wanted me strong enough that when I got out there and it was hot, and it was hot, I mean, it was fire.
Yeah.
That I would have in me what it was going to take to stay. So you can't skip that ever.
You can't skip it. You know, one of the things that you opened up in your book about, and I don't know everything you've ever written, so I could be wrong here, that it felt like probably one of the first times, if not the deepest times, was about your marriage and Keith. And I mean, I already told you, Keith Moore has a special place because the vulnerability that you allow. And you even said, you alluded to this earlier, we started talking, but you asked Keith when you're writing this book, you know, hey, how much are we going to do? How much can I share? And you said to him, what do you want to do? You said, we're in our 60s now. Some couple, some family, some reader we'd never otherwise reach might need to hear our story. And so you're putting that out, vulnerability. The book comes out in about a month from this interview. How are you feeling going about with this vulnerability? And I'm only asking because I don't want to assume what was the hardest thing for you to put in the book. You could tell me, but this feels really hard to me because it's somebody else's life.
You have had so much insight into this because my team at Tyndale can tell you, because two of my people from my friends from Tyndale were here for the audio recording, as well as Kimberly McMahon, who is my personal assistant. And they would tell you because they listened. Well, Kimberly McMahon, who I call K-Mac, she listened to the whole thing. They listened to the first couple of days of it. And I can tell you that the only place my voice broke several times and I had a lump in my throat several times. But the time that I flat out put my head in my hands and sobbed in the audio recording is right there. Sobbed. And we had to stop recording. I made all of them cry. I think that the guy that was doing the recording, he teared up. we all had to get, Kimberly brought me Kleenex and she was going, here. I mean, and it truly, oh, I say this, I don't know if you can see him, but I've got chills in my arms talking about this. This is such a tender thing for me because I think any of us feel this way about our families. I can handle you just beating the snot out of me, but please take it easy on my people who were not looking for this. And I know we don't have that. We don't have the right to ask them how they're going to take it. But I feel, if you ask me what I feel most nervous about, is that Keith not regret it. And I told him, because Jamie, you were one of the first people who read it, because as you and I are having this conversation, we have only let people have it that we're going to be interviewing us in advance of it. So you were one of the very...
I couldn't even find it on Amazon, Beth.
It's just...
Yeah.
And when you said back how much you loved him, and I told him that, and I didn't have to drag him into it. That would have done no good. He had to feel good about it himself. Mm-hmm. And he asked me, he said, how much you're going to tell? I said, you tell me. You tell me how much. But for those listening, we have dealt with quite a challenge of just lifelong PTSD that he earned. When you hear his story, you'll know, you won't have to wonder why he has it and why it's been so hard to get dislodged out of that heart and mind. And then he would be much later diagnosed with bipolar, which is very... For many of our seasons was very well treated, and we were able to get through pretty well. Other times, not as well, and other times just somewhere in between. But to say to people, this is one of the things that we've dealt with and throughout. It's very vulnerable. And it is absolutely the first time I've ever told it. Yes, it is absolutely. And because it wasn't just me, it's my man, you know, don't mess with my people. And I somebody's probably going to, but I did tell him when you responded, I read your text to him and I said, babe, I think that's the way it's going to be for most people, that they'll get to the end of it.
And they'll think,
I like that guy.
Especially, we're not going to talk about it, but especially with your house and all. I mean, it was just like, oh my gosh, this was just so good.
Is it just me, or is it getting really hard to figure out the best way to save for retirement? Fidelity can help you find clarity so you can save the best way for you. With a free personalized plan, goal tracking, and timely insights, you'll be set to take on retirement your way. Get started at fidelity.com/future. Expenses charged by your investments and other costs and fees associated with trading or transacting in your account apply. Fidelity Brokerage Services member NYSE SIPC.
My cat Rachel is the silliest cat I know. One time she played inside a paper bag for 3 hours. What a mystery. Yeah. But I'm glad her health isn't. Thanks to the color-changing litter from Fresh Step Crystal's health monitoring litter. This premium color-changing litter has pH-activated crystals that can help me detect potential illness early. That makes it easy for me to stay on top of her health and well-being. I may not understand all of Rachel's silly quirks, but I can keep up with the important things. Find Fresh Step Crystal's health monitoring litter at a store near you. Fresh Step is a registered trademark of the Clorox Pet Products Company.
Now, this is where I did feel, and I want to close us out with this, and I have 17 more questions I wanted to ask you, but I want to talk about this. I don't want to go into this because we've talked about this on my show before with what has gone down in the last couple of years of your life. So I do want to tell people to go listen to that because we have great conversations about it. What I couldn't get past, Beth, was as I was reading about all that Keith walked through in the past couple of years and your family with the illness and sickness on top of everything already that you guys have walked through. This was happening in the same time as people were burning you alive at the stakes.
Correct.
And I thought to myself, how did you not come back screaming, my family's falling apart, I need you to leave me alone? And I told you when I sent your message, and this is not Christ-like, but I was like, I want everyone that was so mean to Beth Moore to read this book and realize what was happening on the home front in the midst
you
of
know,
this?
Some people out there would not care, or and further than that, would think, well, she got what she deserved. True. She should never have been
she got what she deserved
teaching in the first place. There would be that, but yes. And I have to.
I'm talking about the people who have their mind on straight. Yeah, That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, I will tell you, because I think that you will find this very, very intriguing. We could honestly talk 3 hours. So he missed the whole thing. He has very little memory because of some things that happened. In like his just best way I know to call it is that his the hardware of that lab that computer just literally crashed. So he remembers very little of it. So now that he is a lot more of himself than he was, and he is able to deal with that information and know what. So he started looking it up online. The girls this. I said, y'all, Dad is mad at everyone. I said, he has cussed a blue streak. He is where we were 3 years ago.
Right.
He's just now.
He's catching up.
And he'll have his phone like this and go, and I'm going to read this to you, right? No, babe, don't read it to me. And I said to him over and over again, babe, don't do it. Don't do it. He goes, but I'm just catching up. I said, this is not what you want to catch up on. This is not it. And every now and then he'll go with tears streaming out his cheeks. Why didn't you tell me? And it was like, babe, I lived it right in front of you. You just, you just weren't able to comprehend it. But I do want to say one reason why we do want to take it a little bit easier on people is that there's no one going through nothing.
That's right.
Y'all, there just isn't. I remember when someone said something really ugly about Rick and Kay Warren. You know, I just think so much of that was jealousy because it wasn't anything inappropriate. They weren't accusing them of anything inappropriate. It was just like, you know, just regular hating. But I happened to know at that time some of what they were going through. And man, I came out punching the air. And isn't that sort of how we are? It's one thing when it's me, but if it's somebody else and I'm thinking, you know what? You have no idea. Mm-hmm. You have no idea what you're piling on. And it's life's tough, and it's tough. It's tough in ministry. It really is. But goodness, God is good.
Yeah.
I want to say this before we conclude, because one of the things that I saw, I'd been reluctant because I thought this is going to, I don't think I can bear to look back because it's just going to look like one big train wreck. But it did. But I literally wrote it out in a timeline, these things that shaped me. And throughout all of those awful things, so often they were hemmed in something providential. And I knew, Jamie Ivy, that surely goodness and mercy had followed me all the days of my life, and that I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And that makes it all right.
Well, Beth, I want to say this to you publicly after reading this memoir that you're releasing and hearing your heart and hearing what's going on is you've had to fight a hard fight. And unfortunately, like you just mentioned during those years that Keith was sick, you probably felt alone a lot in those fights. And I just want to publicly say thank you for standing strong. Thank you for not letting the hatred of other people take you down. And I do believe it comes from you have such a deep, deep, deep sense, not only of the love of the Father, but of the justice that he has and of the care that he has for his people. And so that's evident, and I'm grateful for it. And
thank you so much for saying it.
This book, literally, All My Knotted Up Life, really, really good. I hope everyone gets
Thank you,
on it.
Jamie.
Beth,
I've had a blast with you. I wish we had a meal that we could now take part in and feast together. I love you, Jamie Ivy. You are a staunch and mighty woman of God. You hang in there.
You guys, I told you, I had so many more questions. I'm sure you have so many more questions. But in all seriousness, go check out Beth's book. She reads it. So if you're an Audible listener or you like to listen to books that are read by their authors, you are in for a treat with Beth reading it. So go check that out, All My Knotted Up Life. Guys, I want to thank you for all of you guys that are subscribed to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And for those of you that leave comments and ratings, we're super thankful because it helps more people find the show. So I want to read a recent comment and a rating over on the Happy Hours Apple podcast page where you can leave reviews. It says this: "The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey was the first podcast I ever listened to." Wow, awesome. "I found it when it first launched and I'm still listening to it 8 years later." Oh, this is an OG. This is an original Happy Hour listener. So she probably did hear that very first episode with Beth. She goes on to say this: "It is something that I look forward to every week, knowing that I will laugh and learn and always be inspired. I love the authenticity that Jamie and her guests bring to a living Christian life. I sometimes dread certain episode topics because of my own inner critic, only to walk away feeling challenged and encouraged rather than guilt-ridden or shamed. This is one podcast I would recommend to anyone looking for some fun and casual conversations during the week that also provides new understanding and viewpoints." Very grateful for that review. And that is our hope with the show. So thank you for leaving that. Wherever you're listening to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey, I would love if you'd leave a rating or review. And I would really, really love if you shared this podcast with a friend. The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey is a production of Ivey Media Podcasts. Executive produced by Jamie Ivey. Produced by Lindsay Sweeney. Edited by Angie Elkins. Art by Jen Jett Barrett. Original music by Matt Graham. And I'm your host, Jamie. Have a happy hour with a friend.
Set your mind free with a free plan from Fidelity. Start by organizing your plan around what matters most to you. As you go, you'll be able to see your full financial picture, which covers spending, saving, debt, and goals in one simple view. Get started by visiting fidelity.com/freeplan. Expenses charged by your investments and other costs and fees associated with trading or transacting in your account apply. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.